Menopause. Does this word make it sound like the beginning of the end for your body? Like this is when your body just starts falling apart? Well, I have Donna Klassen on the show today, and she is flipping the menopause conversation all on its head. Donna is the CEO and co-founder of Let's Talk Menopause, which is a national nonprofit organization that is invested in helping women get the information that they need and the healthcare that they deserve. She has a remarkable personal story about her own journey with menopause and cancer. She's also a practicing therapist and licensed clinical social worker, so she has a really unique perspective about this time of life. And in the show notes, I'm going to be linking her Menopause Talks series, which feature in-depth discussions with a wide range of menopause specialists. So helpful. Definitely check it out. Okay, let's jump in with Donna. Being 40 or older can be a struggle with new pains and less energy. If you're determined to be strong, energetic, and feeling great for many years to come, this show is for you. No extremes, just doable self-care tips that will change your life. I'm your host, Megan Dahlman. Let's jump in. Well, Donna, we are so excited to have you on the show with us today. What do you think needs to change about the conversation around menopause?
I think a couple of things. One is that it's not a time to be afraid of, and that it's okay to talk about it. I think that, you know, in the past, it symbolizes aging and this big loss and sexuality, and it's something that women fear. And people just in general have not talked about it. They've not shared their experiences. And what we've found is that the more people share their own experiences, the less taboo, the less afraid people are. And just to know that there are treatments and that you can feel better. There's often a culture of suffering among women. And I think that that's really important to change that conversation and to know that you can get good medical care, but you have to be your own advocate right now.
Yeah. You mentioned that phrase, culture of suffering among women. I feel like this starts maybe around the kind of the time when we're giving birth, like postpartum phase. And I know you've worked so closely with that stage of life as well, but we have this tendency to be super women. Like we pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. We don't like to talk about things that are hard because we feel like we can handle that. Why do you feel like we do that to ourselves constantly throughout life, even through this new change too of going through menopause?
Yeah. I mean, look, we can look at like historical reasons about how women have been treated and their role in society. But I also just think it's, our standing in society and not being believed about pain or not being believed about, saying sort of that things are just in your head. Women were not in research studies until the early 1990s, which is crazy, that we have not been participants in the healthcare system in that way. And then, especially in midlife and beyond, women's health has just been neglected. There's been no, emphasis on it. There's been no, acknowledgement of the differences between men and women in terms of care and what happens with all these hormonal shifts, you know, that happen as early as pregnancy, as early as actually your periods and PMDD. And we know that some people are more sensitive to these hormone fluctuations in the period, you know, the luteal phase and in pregnancy and postpartum. And now we know that it's also in perimenopause, and that's sort of like the final frontier, but it's all really linked, right? It's all sort of a continuum of care that needs to be looked at and addressed.
I feel like we get through a certain phase and we feel like we're older, we're wiser, and we're like, and now I take care of it myself rather than leaning on other healthcare professionals. And then maybe when we turn towards them, we're not getting the answers that we're looking for or that we think that we're looking for. And I know that you have your own menopause story around this. And I think a lot of listeners will probably be able to relate to you, but can you share with us how you found out that you were in menopause?
Sure. So I knew I was in perimenopause, in my late 40s, early 50s. I was experiencing symptoms of irritability, which we know is a main symptom, feeling overwhelmed, feeling like my executive functioning was not as strong as it had been, word finding and joint pain, and probably some increased heart palpitations and some other things. And then I found a lump in 2017. I was 52 and still getting my periods regularly. And I elected to have a double mastectomy with a deep flap. And for your listeners, that's where you take the fat from your abdominal area and you put it in your breasts. And during that testing, they found two large cysts on my ovaries that were suspicious. And so a week before my double mastectomy, they took out my ovaries, which is called an oophorectomy, a lovely name. So I got oophorectomized. And basically that means I went into surgical menopause, which is sudden menopause, even though I was in perimenopause, but that last phase was it's surgical because it's immediate. I then, started having a lot of symptoms, hot flashes, and then I got put on something called a NASH result. So women who are breast cancer survivors often get put on an aromatase inhibitor. So basically it makes you go into menopause on steroids. You lose all of your estrogen. So women in menopause who go through it naturally still get 20% of their estrogen from their brain, from their androgen glands. And so the treatment for hormone positive breast cancer is to take away all of your estrogen. So then that happened the next month. And I was working at, I'm a reproductive therapist. I worked with in a partial hospitalization program for pregnant and postpartum women experiencing severe depression and anxiety. And I was flooded with symptoms, including intense hunger that I'd never experienced before. And it was so disturbing, that experience of intense hunger, because I never felt satisfied. And it was very frustrating. I gained 20 pounds within the first year, which was sudden and unexpected, and also hard because I was told, as you know, breast cancer survivor, you need to watch your weight and stay lean, right? And I was trying, right? But it was really impossible. And then I was, forgetful, word finding. And I had this big job where I was running a day program and I couldn't remember people's names or, having to, even meetings, I had to really look at my calendar all the time. I was exhausted. I was so tired. I would come home and I would just dive into bed. And, I'm just trying to think what else. I mean, it was sort of like a gamut of symptoms. And I was lucky because I worked with psychiatrists. I work with mental health professionals. And I work with all women. So I was supported and I was also, connected to care. My immediate care providers, like the person who gave me the oophorectomy, I met with him for 30 seconds post. And I said something like, what should I expect? What about hot flashes? And he was like, oh, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. That's basically what he said.
Okay. What?
Yeah. So somebody with going into surgical menopause, no one said anything to me. And now look, I'm somebody who's educated. I know, I did my research and so I figured it out, but I realized people do not know and people are not prepared for this time of life in terms of what to expect. And so I ended up leaving the Motherhood Center, and that's when I started Let's Talk Menopause, a nonprofit organization, basically to educate and advocate.
That was going to be my next question, was what guidance did your doctor give you around this support? You just said 30 seconds of guidance.
No, and there was no guidance in those 30 seconds. It was sort of like, don't worry about it. Don't assume, you'll be fine. That's basically what he said to me. He said, you'll be fine. And so I got no guidance. And really, our healthcare system is so siloed, right? So his job is to get the cancer out of me, right? And I respect that, right? That's his job. And that's what he did. Or that wasn't cancer, actually. His job was to do a good surgery and to do that, right? And my breast cancer doctors, who are also fantastic, at their job, did their job. But nobody looks at the whole picture, right? Nobody's looking at sort of the overall health, right, of women and sort of guiding them. And, unfortunately, in medical schools, menopause was taken out of the curriculum in the early 2000s. And so doctors get about 0 to 2 hours of menopause training in their entire, and this is including GYNs. Now that's improving a little bit now, especially over the last 2 years. And we're working towards getting, they need some more funding for menopause. They need people to train in menopause. So there's definitely more of it now. And I think that the pressure from individuals who go to their doctors and say, you know, are you experiencing menopause? And they're getting pushed back a little bit and having to sort of learn, you know, what the regular, you know, what is the menopause society, which, you know, guides medical professionals? What are they saying about hormone therapy? What are they saying about treatment options? What's the, you know, literature? We get so many people who say to us, I get told I'm too young to be in menopause. And we know that people go through early premature menopause, early menopause, like it can happen at any time. Generally, you know, people go through menopause, which is really just that 1 year post no period. Perimenopause is 10 years prior. But, you know, the symptoms can start 4 to 10 years prior. So people being told, you know, you're not in menopause yet, you can't be, you're too young. That's not true.
Yeah. And so then when you're starting to feel like something is off with your body, something's bizarre, something's strange, and then you go, you assume that your healthcare provider is going to give you some answers for that. And then they're like, you're fine, you're fine. Like that feels like emotionally just so discouraging. I'm sure in that moment for yourself too, you just felt like misunderstood or dismissed and just like, am I going crazy?
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. They feel, and you know, one of the things that people say is, I just don't feel like myself. And I would say that that's how I felt. I just was not myself. I was somebody who really, you know, really no prior mental health history, right? No anxiety, no depression in the past. And I just was like, I am not functioning. Like I am not functioning as a parent, as a worker, as a person. And I think a lot of people feel that way during this time of life. And then they get fearful about, oh my gosh, is it always going to be this way? Can I feel better? Is this it? Right? Like, is this the end? Right? And I will say to people, it is not the end. In fact, if you really look at this as a window of vulnerability and a window of opportunity, and I know that that's how you talk to your people as well, right? That this is a time of opportunity, that you can live your best life. And it's also then about what do you do in the moment, right? To feel better. And even if it's just these small little things actually make a difference, right? And making sure that you're hydrated, making sure that you're taking care of yourself, that you're giving yourself rest, that you're being, and I don't love this word because I think it's a little like foo-foo, but like little self-compassion, right? And self-compassion does not mean you're being like, you know, oh my gosh, you're so amazing. Or like, it's just meaning like, oh, I'm having a really hard time right now. Or like, oh, like, wow, I'm going through a lot right now. Oh, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now. That's actually self-compassion. It's actually more like self-validating over what's going on, right? It's not giving excuses. It's not saying, you know, you don't need to do anything about it. It's just saying like in the moment, like, oh, I'm having a really hard time. And we don't like to be vulnerable to other people. It's really hard for us to be vulnerable.
I heard a wonderful quote one time, and I say it all the time, and I try to say it as much as I can to remind women. It's that your capability does not always equal your capacity. You know, it's this idea of like, yes, you are capable of so much, but that does not mean that you, in this moment in time, in this snapshot of time, you have the capacity for all of those things right now. And that is okay. And it's like, you have to give yourself grace. And that's what you're saying. Like maybe that word feel like sits on people a little bit better. Like I just got to give myself grace in this moment. Like, yes, I'm capable of checking all the boxes and showing up and having a remarkable memory and having this energy. I know I'm capable of it, but maybe right now in this season of life, it's just not the capacity, and that's okay. Stop for just a second. Is your core a hot mess right now? I know that's kind of a personal question, but if you feel like your core muscles are squishy and they can't fire and like they're just non-existent, and maybe even because of that, you've been experiencing back pain and posture issues and just this general lack of confidence in your body, then I want to invite you to join me for my free 5-day core tune-up. Unfortunately, most other core training strategies out there just target your abs and give you a bunch of like high burn ab exercises that end up hurting you in the long run. So I want to show you something completely different. In my 5-day core tune-up course, I am going to lead you through the exact movements that your entire core needs to engage properly and function at its best. And we're going to do it in less than 10 minutes a day with no equipment needed at all, which is amazing. So by the end of these 5 days, you will feel your core muscles. You will feel your hips and your glutes. You're also going to have this arsenal of knowledge and body awareness for how to adjust the posture of your core throughout the day. And most importantly, you're going to finally experience hope for your core again. This 5-day core tune-up course, it's entirely free. Just go to 5daycore.com to sign up, and I will send you the day one video right away. Strong core, here you come. Previously, when we were talking, you mentioned something that just caught my attention. You said something about menopause being a window of opportunity. And boy, those words, I feel like most women feel like menopause is this window of like demise. So why did you say that? Why is this a window of opportunity for us?
So many of us have spent the last 20 years taking care of other people, whether we had children or parents, and we've often neglected our own health. And we also think about it as a loss and trying to reclaim, you know, how we looked before when we were 25 or 35, right? But if you really look at it like, wow, I've got these bonus 30 years. Women didn't live this long. I've got from 50 to 80 to 100 to live. And how do I want to live these last years, this last chapter? And really, it's more than a chapter. It's, you know, last book, right? And it's an opportunity to take care of oneself, to figure out how do you want to live? What do you want to do? And I have to say that for me, going through this, I decided, why not now? Right? I had been talking for years about doing something, starting something. And I was always kind of fearful about doing that. There was something that was holding me back, something that was in my own, like my, I was in my own way, right? About me being competent and capable and, you know, how can I be the expert in something? Am I really going to do that? And I just decided to own it. I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. And who cares if it doesn't work out, right? So I decided to start a nonprofit on menopause, took a risk. And I also had to take a risk in terms of sharing my story, which is probably the scariest thing for me. As a therapist, you know, we're sort of have been taught in the past not to share our own story. And I decided to do that. And it was terrifying. But now I just feel like I can do anything. And so I want people to think about that a little bit. We kind of let go of societal expectations about what we should look like and how we should be and thin and not having wrinkles and not have, you know, it's like, own it. I now say I'm 57 years old and I just look at people and I don't preface it with, oh my gosh, can you believe I can't believe I'm 52 or 57 or whatever it is. Right? I just say I'm 57 and I just leave it right there for people. And I don't apologize. And there's something really freeing about that. And I know I'm not alone. People who go through this and really accept the age that we are and the status that we are and our own, that we're postmenopausal or that we're in our 50s and really reclaim it, it can be incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it's like this old status symbol of like being young was the ideal. Like being able to say a number when someone asks you how old you were, being able to say like 29, like for the rest of your life. I don't like saying that number anymore. I'm trying to make myself sound older sometimes because it's like I would like the wisdom and the experience that comes with that. And if we can just finally get over ourselves and that those hesitations and insecurities about the stigma of getting older, there is no stigma. There's nothing wrong. And honestly, once you said the age, you know, of most women, once they enter menopause, most likely, if we're taking care of our bodies, we will be postmenopausal the longest in the over the course of our life. If you think of the years that we started menstruating to when we stopped, we will be postmenopausal for the more years than any other year. So I think owning it and not being afraid of that, I think is so empowering. I want to know, how were you able to, because obviously you got help, you got answers. How did you go about finding those answers? Did you have to really hunt this down? I mean, your situation was unique. You didn't have your ovaries anymore. You had a full mastectomy. You had this unique situation. But how did you find the answers that you were looking for?
You know, I'm an active researcher, so I scoured the internet. And I think probably a lot of your listeners are as well. And I really looked for what was out there. I was lucky enough to be, again, with psychiatrists who knew the medications to go on. And because I was at a hospital in New York City that's well-resourced, I was able to go into the psychiatry department there. So I didn't have to spend a lot of money out of pocket. And so, you know, I ended up going on medication, you know, again, like I had never been on before, but I went on Prestique and gabapentin. So gabapentin helped with sleep, which often women help have difficulty with, and it also helps with hot flashes. So I was having, I don't know, 100 hot flashes a day. I mean, really, I was having so many, and night. And I was having them while running groups with people who were, you know, so it was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And then I also, I mean, I went to therapy with somebody who does skills-based therapy like I do, but I also started utilizing some of my own skills. So one of the things is like when you're having a hot flash, right, that can feel like a panic attack and they're really uncomfortable. Right. So instead of, you know, what I was doing is I was sort of getting aggravated by them. And I was sort of like going like, oh my God, I'm having a hot flash. This is so annoying. Like, ugh, like just getting irritated by them. And my kids who are home, this is actually during COVID and we're at dinner. And my kids were just like, Mom, like, stop. We know you're having hot flashes. Just stop. Right. I mean, they were just kind of annoyed by me. They were a little nicer than that. My kids are very nice, but my four daughters, and so I ended up using some skills that I now talk to people about. And that was just labeling, like, oh, I'm having a hot flash right now in a very neutral way. And then just saying to myself, what can I do right now to feel better? And often with hot flashes, you need to move. And a similar skill with panic attacks is changing the temperature. So getting splashing cold water on your face, getting some ice and just putting it at the back of your neck or on your hands. I would walk outside. And then I just noticed that the hot flashes didn't bother me as much. And it's not that they solved the hot flash issue, because it is a biological process that happens, you know, but it made them easier to tolerate. And then in combination with the medicine. And so I started using my own skills. And then I also started doing Pilates and moving and walking all the time. And, you know, I've always exercised on, you know, most of my life on and off, but I definitely had periods, especially in that perimenopausal phase when I was working full time, it was much harder to exercise and take care of myself. And I think that is one thing, right? Like when, you know, one of the things that I hear from women all the time is that, you know, oh my gosh, I don't feel like I can work anymore. Right. And especially if they're like experiencing brain fog. And it's those skills that I just talked about apply there as well. Like the more you fight word finding and the more aggravated you get about it, the harder it is to find those words. So some of it is literally accepting that like your brain just is a little tired and it's having a little bit of a harder time. We had a guest on our menopause talk, Dr. Neil Epperson from Colorado, and she's an expert in brain and cognitive issues in menopause. And she just said, like, we are living longer. Our brain is not used to being at this high level for so long. And so we have to give our brain some breaks. And also just accept, and that sort of like that grace in forgetting words. Like just because I forget some words doesn't mean that they're not there or that I'm not smart or that I'm not capable.
I love that reminder. And I love how you walked through almost this like action plan, because so often we find ourselves in that moment and we're just playing defense. Like we're just reacting to what's happening to us. Like, oh no, I'm having a hot flash. And all we know to do is complain and panic. And I love how you just flip that around and said, no, this is happening. This is why this is happening, which I think is that education piece, which is what we're all here for, is teaching people like, this is why this is happening. This is normal. And here are some methods to work yourself through that. So what I'm hearing you say is like, for each of the symptoms that someone might be experiencing in menopause, the brain fog, the lack of energy, the vasomotor symptoms that you talked about, those hot flashes, maybe even heart palpitations, just having an action plan in that moment sounds so powerful.
Yeah, I want people to think about it like this. It's not that I'm saying not to get treatment for some of these symptoms, right? It's that there's short-term and longer-term things that you can do. In that moment, you're not going to find a doctor who's going to tell you right away what to do to get, you know, to solve the issue of hot flashes, right? So that takes some time. That takes some research. That takes going to a doctor. That takes some trial and error. But what can you do in the moment, right, to help you feel better? It can be these little tiny things. And I think that's also what you do. It's sort of like get moving, right? Like get, just start, do something, right? And because it can feel paralyzing, right? Like when you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I see women in my private practice because I also am I'm a therapist. I restarted my private practice and I work with women in menopause. And, you know, one of the things that I see happening is this, you know, catastrophizing, like what if it's MS? What if I have Alzheimer's? What if I have this, right? And those are worries that like, A, you can't control in that moment, right? Like it's sort of like you do, maybe you don't. So it's important to get checked out for some of these things, but it's also important to know that these are symptoms and that most likely this is, you know, a lot of the symptoms in menopause go away post-menopause. Now, there are long-term health risks that people need to look at as well, but a lot of the symptoms, the hot flashes, they may just go away. Some of the anxiety may just go away. You know, some of the more sort of like physical symptoms may go away. Now, in terms of long-term health, that's what I mean about a window of opportunity, right? This is a time to really look at your health, look at your bone health, right? Because we lose 20% of our bone density in those first 2 years post-menopause. The lack of estrogen can also affect your heart, it can affect your brain, and the genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is the urinary leaking, the increased UTIs, the vaginal dryness, which, by the way, there are treatments for, and people don't know about it. And they don't actually know that that is chronic and progressive, that does not get better without treatment.
I feel like this is the confusing and often mind-boggling aspect of menopause is that it feels like there's so much. Like there's so many symptoms and so many things, and everybody experiences it a little bit differently. And, you know, as we wrap up here, I feel like someone listening just needs to know like what to tell themselves when they're not feeling like themselves. Like, what would you say to her? Like, I just don't feel like myself anymore. I'm feeling paralyzed. I'm panicking. I feel like this is the end. Like you had said earlier, like, I feel like this is the end of my body as I know it.
I would say this is how you feel right now. And it sounds awful. And I'm so sorry you're feeling this way. Really sucks. Like it really does. And this is a moment. And you know, you can feel better and you will feel better. And to think about this is just like right now, this is how I feel in this moment.
Well, Donna, this has been so helpful. And I hope that this has really helped women just open up their idea of like, okay, maybe I can start having conversations about this and be more open about the symptoms I'm experiencing and speak up more. And most likely, many women around me are dealing with this stuff too. So
yeah, I think if people start talking about it, they'll find that people are hungry to talk about it and want to talk about it.
Well, Donna, we so appreciate you being with us today and we cannot wait to hear a little bit more from you. We're going to have some bonus content for all of our listeners. So we're going to make sure that that is available too. So Donna, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.